There is a TV program that some of you might have seen and some of you might like. I don't know if anyone will know it. It's called The Detectorists. Anybody seen it? Complete blank. Oh, yes! And you're doing that with that real enthusiasm of a dedicated follower of a program that hardly anybody else saw. The Detectorists is a TV program about a couple of men, really, few people, who do metal detecting. We all know. Does anyone who not know what metal detecting is? I'm going to demonstrate to you how exciting a hobby metal detecting is. Okay, I got my metal detector. It looks a little bit like a strimmer. Yeah, garden strimmer. Okay. So you've got to imagine I'm in a very muddy field on a very cold day when everybody else is at the cinema or at home or gone swimming in a nice warm swimming pool or basically asleep. And this is what I'm doing very slowly. When I'm not so achy, and because I've just got out of bed and I'm a bit more in the rhythm, I might be going like this. Yeah. Have you seen this? Anyone seen anyone doing this? Yeah? No? You're looking very bemused. It's a really exciting hobby, isn't it? This. I've seen quite a few in the fields near where my father-in-law lives. And he lives in Somerset. Oh, where's she going with this, I wonder? Who's been up on the news recently? Carol, hit the slide. Don't worry, I've only got one slide. There's two people on there who are detectorists in the corner, clutching it looks like the top of two guitars, but I think it's the top of their metal detector. I'm going to have to remember their names. I've written it down. Does anyone know their names and why they're up there on my screen? Where's their name? I wrote it down this morning because I thought someone might ask. Lisa Grace and Adam Staples. And they are currently like the most famous detectorists in history. Oh, because they found something exciting. Does anybody know what? There's a clue on the screen. Coins, silver coins. They found some silver coins in a field near where my father-in-law lives in Somerset, at an undisclosed place, to stop people coming and doing it wrong, which is basically just digging up a field. You have to go with this until the machine goes beep, and then you find a Coca-Cola can, and then you go beep, and you find a buckle from a farmer's belt, and you beep, and you find a silver coin that dates back to the Battle of Hastings. They found 2,528, I think, coins in the space of 5 hours. And it, in one fell swoop, I know four times something is quadruples. What's five times something? Quintuples. I'm so glad you're clever up here in Leatherhead, aren't you? It quintupled the number of coins that we had from that era in one find. Though I did hear someone commentate that would reduce the value of the treasure hoard a little bit because they were flooding the market. So they go back to the Battle of Hastings. It's phenomenal, isn't it? And it's hopefully, well, Tracy and Adam hope, it's going to be declared treasure. Because if it's declared treasure, they and the friends who found it, who had the sense not to appear on camera, they were trainee detectorists. So maybe they didn't qualify for fame. If it's declared as treasure, they and the farmer who owns the land get to keep it. Okay? So this is a really interesting little bit of happenstance when the Lord said to me, I want you to preach on these two parables that we've been thinking about, me and him, recently. When I saw this in the news, I thought, oh, there's a really good illustration. Because the bottom line is here that the man in Jesus' story who finds the treasure the only detectorist in the Bible. But he wouldn't have had a machine, but you know what I mean. He didn't get given it. He had to go and buy the field, yeah? So he staged stum. Now, they could have staged stum. They could have been, you know, oh, don't tell anyone, let's just walk away with it all. But of course, the kind of treasure that you find, people would know where they got it from, yeah? So they were honest. They had to wait, and they are still waiting for the crown to decide, is it really theirs? But the man who found the treasure hidden in the field, which, by the way, was official economic advice at the time. You can check this, you can look it up in a Bible encyclopedia, but it was the official advice. If you've got lots of money, stick it in the ground. All right? Which is interesting. This man finds somebody else's stuff. He knows it doesn't belong to him, but he sells everything he's got in order to get his hands on it by buying the field. Okay. I don't think the moral of the story is that Jesus is approving of that kind of sneaky behavior. Okay. I think there's something else in this story that Jesus wants us to think about. So you've got the second story, which is interesting as well, because although both stories have two men who by different means find something that is of great worth, they're quite different men. In the second story, the man is a merchant, he's a trader, and actually he's an expert. He's looking for pearls, he's regularly testing for pearls. For some reason, I want to kind of do this, like bite it, but I don't know if that's a way of actually testing pearls or not. I've made that up. But he was determinedly looking for pearls to sell to make a profit. And he would be very much involved in trying to work out what's real and what's fake. And so when he came across this pearl, the best pearl he'd ever seen in his entire career, this was it. This was the defining moment. This was worth everything. So he also sells everything he has in order to acquire the pearl. That sounds a little bit more legitimate than the first story. But what they have in common is they both find something of great worth, treasure and a pearl, and then they choose to give everything that they have in order to get it. Yeah? They're committed, not involved. They are committed and not involved. Now, 2 weeks ago, I had the great joy of being at Soul Survivor. Anybody not know what I'm talking about when I say Soul Survivor? You can put your hand up and admit ignorance, you know, it's a healthy thing to do. Anyone not know what Soul Survivor is? Okay, so Soul Survivor is a Christian festival that's been running now for 27 years. And this year alone, 33,000 teenagers over 4 weeks gathered together in two different venues in the UK to praise and worship God. That was just this year. 33,000 teenagers. Isn't that amazing? All right. So I've been going for 17 years to Soul Survivor, and we missed 3 years because we didn't have anyone quite in the right age bracket from either of my churches. And by the way, I bring you greetings from Southwater in St. Andrews. So we missed 3 of those. So I've done 14 Soul Survivors. I have met people who have done all 27. It's been going for 27 years. In the week that I was there at Soul Survivor, 1,800 young people gave their lives to Jesus Christ. I think that's worth a whoop. I'm sorry. Oh, wait. 1,800 young people gave their lives to Jesus Christ in week, I was there week B. Thank you. It's worth the whoop. In total, I've written the stats down, so maybe out by a couple of hundred, but I'm in the right ballpark when I tell you that this summer, over 3,000 young people have given their lives to Jesus Christ. In the last 10 years alone, over 10,000 teenagers have given their lives to Jesus Christ through the ministry that is Soul Survivor. That is what one of my young people would say, epic. Last Sunday at Southwater, we had a service. We always have a service when we come back from Soul Survivor where they can share what happened. And we had the great joy last Sunday of sharing the news that two of our young people were amongst those 1,800 who gave their lives to Jesus Christ in Wheatby. It was a great joy for the congregation. Over the 14 visits that we've made, we've taken about, we're still trying to compile the final definitive list, but we reckon 40 teenagers we have taken. And probably most of those 40 made a dedication, gave their lives to Jesus. It usually involves running to the front of the tent. And when I say tent, it's as big as a football field. It is massive. It has to seat 12,000 young people. So it's huge. And literally, with no hype at all, on the first night, several hundred young people come who are willing to give their lives to Jesus. Of the 40 that we took, probably about 30 of them made a commitment to Jesus. We prayed for each young person last Sunday by name. But currently, as it stands, only 20% of those who made a commitment are still involved in church. It's about 8 or 9 of them are still active in the church. Some of them now are around the age of 30, 31. So there's a massive attrition rate there, isn't there? And to give it its credit, every year Soul Survivor tries really hard to tell these young people that what they're doing is significant and important for the rest of their lives. I had the privilege of listening to a talk based on these two parables while at Soul Survivor, so I am shamelessly stealing some of what was said by a lovely young leader in the Elim Church called Laura Alcock. By the way, you can go online and you can find out, you can actually listen to the Soul Survivor talks for yourself, and they are hilarious and meaningful and powerful and well worth your time. She described how the two men in this story had got it. They understood instinctively to get that which was worth everything, they had to give everything. And she asked these young people, are you willing to do the same? Go all in, leaving nothing out of the deal, ring fencing nothing, holding nothing back. Are you prepared to go all in? And when you read these stories again, as I'm sure you will, you go back and see the context of these two short parables. Because Jesus has been preaching to the crowd. He's told them the parable of the sower, how some seed will fall on good soil and grow and bear fruit, like those nine young people out of the 40 that we took who are still involved in the faith. And some will fall, and you know all the rest of the story. But then he takes them into the house, often coded in Matthew for like a church gathering, the house. He takes them into the house, and then he preaches this. In essence, he's saying, do you want to be part of the crowd, or do you really want to be in, all in, holding nothing back, ring fencing nothing, one of my disciples? And that's the choice. You can be involved when it suits you, like crowds are when they're interested, or you can be all in, fully committed. I find that quite interesting, that Jesus reserved that kind of really tough teaching for those disciples. Maybe because he knew how hard it was going to be to be all in. Laura Alcock talked about the voices of the world that will try and persuade you to live in the ways of the world. Remember, she's talking mostly to teenagers. But I thought, actually, what she said should be played in every single congregation up and down the land. Because we have to bear a responsibility for the fact that this attrition is happening, these numbers of young people that are not sitting here in this congregation, the empty seats in here. We have to bear responsibility for it. They look to us for their model of faith. Have we gone all in, held nothing back, ring-fenced nothing? I met young people there. The great joy of being at Soul Survivor and being there was kids coming up for reunions with us. Oh, you're here this year, fabulous. I met young missionaries who've gone abroad. I met young missionaries who've stayed at home. I met young people who have dedicated their lives to Jesus because of that moment when they ran to the front of a tent 10 years ago. And I praise God for them. Laura Alcock talked about the siren voices of the world with which we Christians are far too easily ready to conform. It's some while since I have been here. It's highly likely to be the last time I will be here because of decisions made in the Methodist Church that will mean that I will no longer be all in. We live at a time of great significance when God will remove his lampstand from those churches that are not prepared to go all in. Ring fence nothing. Hold nothing back. Our young people are perhaps the most damaged generation of all generations. And they need Jesus. They need Jesus. They need Jesus. And we have Jesus. We have Jesus. We have Jesus. He is here today. St. Paul tells us a few verses on that because of the riches of God's love, we can stand here at his table knowing that in our poverty, his love covers all our sin and brings healing. That's a message that we need to live out loud and proud and that young people need to hear. Let's go all in, ring fencing nothing, holding nothing back. Amen.